It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning back to throw. They pick up the blitz. Throws one left down the sideline into the end zone. Touchdown! Hakeem Nicks! Vic takes the snap again. Pumps. He's going to get sacked by Tuck. Fumbles the football. Giants have it at the 26-yard line. Draw right for Bradshaw. Cuts at the one. Goes into the end zone. Touchdown. Nice run by Bradshaw to run it in from 4 yards out. Manning will throw on first and 10. Heaves one deep down the left side for Manningham, who makes the catch. Gallops out of a tackle to the 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live, everybody. John Schmelk, Lance Meadow on Giants.com. Obviously a very, very, very rough Sunday for the New York Football Giants, coming up short at home against the Seattle Seahawks, and we are here to talk about it all morning long. Good morning, everybody. My name is John Schmelk. Joining me as always on every Monday is Lance Meadow. And Lance, as bad of a loss as you can have for the New York Giants at home against the Seattle Seahawks, they let the Seahawks have a late drive on them down the field for a touchdown. They answer, but then, of course, the costly turnover, the pick, interception return for a touchdown on the pass intended for Victor Cruz. And the Giants are now 3-2, and they blow a chance to win four straight. And they're going to have to recover this week and get ready for a very tough Buffalo Bills team next Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, this is not the Bills team that people are used to seeing year in and year out over the last 5 years. This is a very talented Bills team that's 4-1 coming off a win over the Eagles. But we'll certainly touch on that a little bit later in the week as we progress here on Big Blue Kickoff. But let's talk about, obviously, the heartbreaking loss to the Seahawks. You know, despite all that went wrong with yesterday's game, and I think the running game issues is probably the biggest thing that jumps off the page, is the fact that they were still in position to win the game, as you just alluded to, John. You know, it was first and five, okay? And obviously the false start backed them up, so they wind up losing 5 yards, and then the deflection off Victor Cruz's hands leads to a pick six for the Seahawks to seal the game. A lot of calls that I got yesterday on the postgame show, and I'm actually interested to hear your perspective. Would you have run the football even after the false start to set up a more manageable second or third down before throwing it?
Well, you can, but here's the problem. They hadn't run the ball effectively since the first quarter. So if you run the ball, then all of a sudden it's second and goal from the 12. What's the difference? And I think you mentioned the big point in this game, and really it's something that's plagued this team since the start of the year. The Giants are supposed to be a power running football team. They have not done that once this entire season. They're averaging 3 yards a carry. They get no push. They allowed a five-yard loss for a safety. Do you know how hard it is to lose 5 yards on a running play? It's hard to do. And they have to figure out a way to run the football. And until they do that, Lance, they're going to have to go to the air. And when you go to the air, you're going to make mistakes. Jimmy Johnson always says it. More teams lose games than they do win games. The teams that win games make the fewest bad plays. They don't make the most big plays. And when you can't run the football consistently and you have to throw to get your yards, mistakes are more likely to happen.
And listen, everyone was commending Eli Manning's decision-making in the first couple of games. And the reason for that was he was not in a position where he had to press the envelope or had to throw the deep bombs to try to get this team back into the flow of the game. Obviously, when you don't have a running game, you become a one-dimensional offense, and that ultimately affected Eli Manning's decision-making, which led to interceptions and fumbles. But you're right. You need to have that balance. Now, there were a lot of factors that didn't help the running game cause yesterday, but that's not still a valid excuse because they've been dealing with these issues since the preseason. David Bosch was inactive, but they're still acclimating more new guys into the offensive line. Brandon Jacobs was inactive, but the system remains the same. So even though the same personnel's not there, okay, the blocking schemes didn't alter just because Jacobs was not in the game.
Correct.
DJ Ware knows the system. It's not as if the Giants said, you know what, we got to come up with a completely new playbook because our beast is not in the backfield. And now they're dealing with more injuries, John, so moving forward, this could be a trend with Chris Snee suffering a concussion, Heinoski and Nextinger. You may see some different guys in the lineup against the Bills next week.
And I realize some fans are going to call up and say, this is why you had to re-sign O'Hara, and this is why Richie had to come back. Well, guys, bottom line, neither one of those guys are playing right now because I don't think either guy is healthy enough yet to play. So, correct. Is the line not as good because those two guys aren't here? Yes, I think that's probably a fair thing to say. However, they were not, and probably still are not, realistic options to play those spots based on their health. So that's not something you can come back and get on the front office for. Injuries happen, it's circumstance, but certainly the guys that have replaced Richie and Sean and the line as a whole, I don't want to just point the finger at those guys, they have not come together and become that great cohesive unit that we hoped they would have been. Now, there's a plenty of stuff to talk about in this game, tons of stuff, and we're going to get to all of it, but we want to start talking to you guys on the phones. I'm sure the Giant fans are out there, and you're probably not too happy this morning. 201-939-4513, that's the phone number, or you can hit us up on Twitter at hashtag Giants chat, and let's go to the phone lines, Lance, and go down to Washington, D.C., and say hello to Mike. Mike, what's up, pal?
Yes, man. I was trying to figure out. Eli is throwing more interception, not because of his doing, but because we have these short receivers. Why don't we go out and get a tall receiver that could help this guy with all these tip ball receivers?
Why?
What do you guys think about that?
I don't see how a short receiver had anything to do with the interceptions yesterday. Victor Cruz slipped coming out of his break near the goal line, so the pass was a little bit out in front.
I'm not talking about that one. I'm talking about the whole since Plexico left.
Well,
every time we get in the end zone, you have to be some kind of a dump off pass. Just throw the ball in the air, and this guy will go up and get it.
It's not that simple. It just isn't that simple. And if you want to get a tall receiver, you have Ramsey's Barton coming back when he gets off a pup list. And thanks a lot for the call. But it's just not that simple. You don't have a tall guy and you throw it high. Otherwise, there'll be a bunch of 6'9 converted NBA power forwards out there boxing people out and catching balls in the end zone. That's not how it works.
The Jets are not even doing that effectively with Plexico in the lineup.
Great point.
Their passing game is struggling, and they have one of the tallest receivers in the NFL. There's not a quick fix. Everybody's looking for the Band-Aid to put over the cut and get through the next 2 weeks.
It's not even a Band-Aid. You know, they want the miracle cure.
Well, yeah. But you're not going to find that from a guy sitting on the couch. You could bring in a 7-footer. You want Sean Bradley to play wide receiver? Run him out on a go route. Here.
Actually, you know what? With the NBA lockout, there might be a lot of guys for work.
Valid point. You know, they may be
Zsa Pachulia, perhaps, will come play wide receiver.
Don't bring him overseas. You know, put him to work here in the States.
201-939-4513. Steve's in Connecticut. Steve, what's up, pal?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, bud?
Hey, Steve.
I don't know if you guys were watching. Maybe you were, maybe you weren't. But I was watching Mike and Mike in the morning, and they had Antonio Pearson. And he made a statement. It made my eyebrows raise just a little bit. He was just saying basically that if it wasn't like basically season-ending surgery, that our guys should be out in the field. Like, I don't know how much you read into that, but I don't know what you guys think about that. And what do you think about this game coming back to bite us later on?
Hey, question, Steve. What players was AP referring to about, you know, trying to play through injuries?
He must have been referring to Tuck and Jacobs, no?
He didn't give specific names. He was just, you know, saying in general. But I mean, you obviously got to figure out what he's talking about, because those are the only few that's injured.
Yeah, I mean, you would think. Look, Antonio Pierce is obviously my guy. We did shows here with him all the time, and I respect everything he has to say about football. But I'm never going to get on a player for not playing based on an injury. You're not in the guy's body. You don't know how he feels. It's pretty clear Brandon Jacobs has a legit knee injury. It's swollen. And if you're a running back and you can't run, you're hurting the team by forcing yourself out there. And we saw it last week with Justin Tuck. Justin Tuck didn't play, but the Giants have so much depth on the defensive line with Tolleson, Jason Pierre-Paul, OC, the tackles. Why would you send them out there, risk further injury, you get them healthy, and you get them back? I can't go after these guys and say they should have played and the team would have won if these guys would have played through their injuries. I don't think that's fair, Steve.
Yeah, what do you guys think about special teams? What grade do you give the special teams so far?
Well, I mean, listen, the Giants had to go through very long drives all throughout the course of this game. I mean, Steve Weatherford, you know, had mixed results in terms of his punting. And one of the reasons why they got a safety is a lot of the drives, you know, were started within their own 10-yard line. And if you don't move the chains with the running game, that then gives the Seahawks favorable field position. So it was a game of field position yesterday, and it benefited the Seahawks tremendously. I mean, other than Devin Thomas's one decent return, I would not give the special teams unit solid marks, though let's not forget the loss of Zach Diassi, I think, did play a role.
Though Jim Cordell stepped in, did a good job with the long snapping, did an excellent job. Steve, I'll look at this a couple ways on the special teams. One, I thought the coverage teams were pretty good. Leon Washington had a couple decent returns, but nothing spectacular. This is a guy that can break one at any moment, so you give the special teams credit for containing him. But in terms of the Giants' return game, I thought their blocking on the gunners was terrible at times. Every time Aaron Ross caught a punt, and that was the one play, I think John Ryan booted it. I think he had a 68-yard punt, and Aaron Ross caught it at like the 8-yard line. He looks up after a 68-yard punt, and it didn't have great hang time, good, but not great. You should have tons of room to run, tons. And you should get 8-9 yards by default. Ross gets the ball, looks up, he has both gunners running right at him. So he used to make two cuts. He only gains 5 yards.
Every game, though, if you notice, every game, like every time there's a punt, it's like the other team is like right there waiting. Like we never get like barely any room to do anything.
And that's why, Steven, thank you very much for the call. I know a lot of people like to get on the returners, but a lot of time it's the blocking on the returns that's the bigger issue.
Yeah, you know, and I just want to get back in terms of how the Giants' lack of field position, I should say, really benefited the Seahawks. If you look at the starting points where the Seahawks had some of their drives in the second quarter, they started one from the 30, one from midfield. I mean, when you give even mediocre teams good field position and they only need to go 50 yards, a good percentage of the time they're going to walk away with points. Then from the 49-yard line, they started a drive. I know it did lead to an interception. The 35-yard line, the 35-yard line. I mean, even the 29. They never barely even had a touchback, the 45. I'm just going through the different drives where they were started, 34. I mean, everything was at least from the 30-yard line or up in terms of where Seattle started its drives. And you know, even with their backup quarterback, you know, you're going to give them opportunities to capitalize, and Seattle may not have taken advantage each and every time, but it really puts your offense in a very deep hole.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, though, but the offense also put the defense in some deep holes
because they
were three and out all day in the second half. The Giants' offense in the second half until the end of the game in those two last drives was terrible. They start the game three and out. Second possession of the second half, three and out. Third possession of the second half. They only get one first down. So the Giants got one first down in the entire third quarter. You're not going to win games doing that. You got to do a better job. And granted, the Seahawks second half defense has been good this year, but you got to do better than that. And the one touchdown the Giants did get in that second half was, quite frankly, on a prayer throw into a double team. There's a deflection, and Victor Cruz gets lucky that the ball bounces to him. And let's call it like it is. It was a lucky play. And it was a smart play by Eli, though, because it's third and long. If it's picked off, it's the same thing as a punt. So you're giving up field position on a deep pass that gets picked anyway, so it's worth the chance. But let's call it like it is. It was a lucky play that Victor Cruz caught the deflection and ran for a touchdown.
And that was the only third down conversion in the game, too. Which, I mean,
that's a great point.
Yeah, it was. I mean, they were 1-for-12, and that was the only third down conversion. That's how much luck they needed just to get through a third down.
But again, that comes back to the running game. Because you're in third and 8. You're in third and 9. You're in third and 10.
Third and 26, they had one.
Exactly. So you're not in third and manageables, so Eli can just throw that 7-yard slant pattern and get the first down. You got to try to throw it downfield, and that's when the mistakes come.
And you know, a lot of thoughts on the postgame show and even on Twitter yesterday was fine. So if the Giants can't run the ball, Schmelk, what they should do is they should go pass heavy. That's not the solution.
You got to figure out a way to run it. You can't win just being a passing team in this league. You can't do it. You got to have balance.
And you become a predictable offense that way.
And you turn the ball over that way, too. 201-939-4513. Mike's in New Jersey. Mike, what up, pal?
Hey, what's going on, Lance? What's going on, everybody?
What's up, Mike?
Hey, Mike.
Yeah, man, it was just a horrible game all around. You know, it was fitting for the Halloween season, that's for sure. But one thing that stood out to me, though, and I want to get your opinion on this, you know, we're right there. We got the ball first and goal. You know what I'm saying? About to punch it in, maybe win the game. Mm-hmm. How the heck are we not going to do a play action? Or how the heck we're not going to run like a halfback draw out of shotgun formation? I mean, what's going on with the play calling over here? That's ridiculous, man.
Well, the problem.
I understand that we're stopping us on the run. But we got to throw in some trickery in there, man. We're being too predictable, and it's getting ridiculous.
Well, Mike,
quite frankly,
if they didn't get that false start penalty, I bet they would have ran the ball on the first place from scrimmage. Because they were at, I believe it was the 7-yard line. It was at the 5-yard line, excuse me. It was the prior possession when they were on the 7 and they got the false start. They're at the 5-yard line. It's easy to run the ball a few times and get it in from the 5. It's not as easy to run the ball in from the 10 on a couple of running plays. So it was the mistake by Will Beattie getting called for that false start. And, Mike, I think that's where you got to look for in terms of putting the blame on what happened at the end of that game. And quite frankly, Eli Manning should not have thrown that pass. Even if Victor Cruz catches it, it's a 4-yard gain. There were 3 or 4 Seahawks in the vicinity. It's a risky play for not a whole lot of reward. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got you. I agree with you, man. But if you even look at that play, if you pay attention to it, if you look at Bradshaw, he could have hit Bradshaw on a screen, and he even had a blocker in front of him.
He was wide open, you're right.
He probably could have gotten it in. I don't understand why he looked on his left, gives it to Cruz with 4 defenders on him. I mean, give me a break, Eli. I mean, you got to get your things together over here, pal. I don't know what the hell he's doing. Honestly, I don't.
Yeah, and you know, and part of that, I say, is the situation of the game. You know, Eli Manning's decision-making, you could definitely hold it under the magnifying glass today, given what the Giants had to do to try to rally back in the game. But, you know, you're right. Relying on your running backs in the flat is an option that worked all throughout the Eagles game. And you know what? It may be a conservative approach, but you know what? There's no harm in dumping it off to the running back and letting them bulldoze and do the work for you. And you're right. That probably would have been the best option in that situation and would have given you a more manageable second down. You could have run it at least maybe once or twice before you went back to the pass. So you could definitely hold that play up. But overall, throughout the entire course of the game, maybe with the exception of that play, I don't put this game on Kevin Gilbride or the play calling.
Or Eli Manning, for that matter.
You know, I mean, it was just a matter of that they did not have a reliable running game. So, of course, the creativity is going to be limited. Though they did run an end-around, so let's not forget about that.
Now, Eli Manning for the game, folks. Let's not get too tough on Eli here. 24 for 39, 420 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 3 picks. But remember, the last pick of the game was a, you know, desperation throw down the field. That doesn't even count. And even though we call that throw to Victor Cruz a bad decision, it shouldn't have been an interception. It was a tip ball, and it goes to the defender. So you can't really kill Eli for that. It wasn't totally on him by any means. Now, the pick to Earl Thomas earlier in the game, that's fair. He put too much air into the ball. Earl Thomas came over, made a nice play on that ball and had the pick. But, again, you're making your quarterback do everything because you can't run the football. And it's when you put the ball in harm's way in the air, you're going to have things like that happen. It's just the way things go. There are more situations and opportunities to have trouble.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. You can also send in your questions on Twitter to hashtag Giants Chat. He's John Schmelk. I'm Lance Meadow. Glad to have you aboard here on Big Blue Kickoff. Let's go back to the lines. We've got Victor in Virginia. Victor, you're on Giants.com. What's on your mind? Victor, are you there?
Hey, fellas.
Hey, Victor.
What's up, Vic? I don't know. My name is Victor, but my name is Ezekiel.
What's up, Ezekiel?
Great show. I would like to say a couple of things. I have no idea why everybody is killing Eli Manning. I mean, he has one good game. I mean, a couple good games this season, then one bad game, which really isn't his fault. Just too much on him, a lot of pressure and stuff like that. So I have no idea why everybody's killing him. But to get to your comment earlier about the Jimmy Johnson thing, and we have 5 turnovers, so we pretty much killed ourselves in this game.
Yep.
What about last year? I'm just going off last year. Last year, we turned the ball over just mind-blowing amount of times.
They led the league in turnovers.
Offenses, and we outgained other teams' offenses by sometimes 100 yards, 150 yards. Is this going to be an ongoing thing? I was just like your comment. Thanks.
And Zico, we appreciate the call. Thank you very much. And yesterday, by the way, the Giants did outgain the Seahawks by 40 yards. So it was a similar situation. And the Giants had done a good job this year, Lance, of not turning the ball over. They had protected the football a lot better. It was a point of emphasis this year, and Eli Manning was taking better care of the football. But when you lose that turnover battle and you give the ball to the other team 5 times, and granted, it's really only 4 because, again, the last pick was a desperation type of throw. and one goes back for a touchdown, it decreases your chance of victory. If you look at all the stats, when a team wins a turnover battle, they're at something like 80% victory. When they lose it, they're at 30% victory. And it's like that for every single team. You can't turn it over.
And listen, you know, we haven't really talked about the defense at all, and I'm sure we're going to get some calls. But you know what? The defense, as bad as they played at times.
Oh, they were bad. They were bad.
They put the Giants, though, in a position to win the game, John. Seahawks had the ball twice in the red zone early in the game, and they held them to nothing. No field goal opportunities, no touchdowns. It was similar to the Rams game, if you recall, where the Rams had three opportunities in the red zone in the first half and only settled for field goals. So, you know, the Giants' defense, when it comes to the red zone opportunities early, they held their own. But you're right. You give good teams those opportunities, like the Patriots down the road, they're going to walk away with touchdowns. They're not going to settle for nothing and leave points off the board. So you're right. You lose the turnover battle, does not bode well for you long term.
And I want to get more into the defense later on, but I got a couple more calls on the offense here. So I'm going to go to Justin in New York. Justin, what's going on?
Hey, what's up?
What's up?
How are you doing today?
Good, Justin. Good, Justin. What's on your mind?
I would like to discuss Eli Manning's interception problems.
Okay. What about him?
It seems like Eli Manning had way too many interceptions, and he took too many chances last year because he had more receivers than he does last year. Steve Smith, Kevin Boss, he decided to take more chances with them.
Don't you think Eli's done a better job this year, though, protecting the football, at least until that game yesterday?
Yes. I think that that last interception in the game in the red zone from tipped off of Victor Cruz is because, you know, he was giving Victor Cruz a lot of balls, and he was doing a really good job catching them, and I think he might have given him an extra chance, and that one was just too much for him.
I mean, I don't know if I really buy that. You know, I mean, you can make the argument that, yeah, he had more proven receivers last year, but listen, Jake Ballard made catches. Victor Cruz is making catches. It's good for a quarterback that he has confidence in his weapons. That was one of the major question marks coming in. Who is going to be the slot receiver and who is going to be the tight end? And finally, they're getting some consistency from those two positions to sort of fault Manning for now relying too much on them. You know, it just goes to show you the storyline of yesterday's game. If he had no reliable running game, who else is he supposed to give the ball to?
Correct. And again, it was a dangerous throw to Cruz, but it's one that should have been picked. It was tipped because Cruz slipped coming out of his break. It happens. But when you have to throw the ball and you can't run it in, those are the types of things that happen.
And I'm not going to make excuses for the interception, like you said it. But you know what? At least Cruz fought for it. I mean, he made an effort to try to – you know, it's one thing if your receiver does not bail you out.
Correct.
He tried all he could to try to haul it in. And like I said, I know that's trying to make a very – small positive out of something that went very bad for the Giants in the long run, but I think that's a positive sign in terms of his learning curve and development as a young receiver.
I don't think anybody would argue that Victor Cruz does not go after the football extremely hard whenever it goes up to him, Lance. That's a great point. Back to the phones at 201-939-4513. Dan's in New Jersey on Victor Cruz. What's up, Dan?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Victor Cruz, I mean, the guy obviously has enough talent to be a big-time playmaker in this offense. He's making us forget about Steve Smith more and more every week.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously played probably his best game and his worst game of his career in the same game yesterday.
Yeah, you know, and the play that nobody's mentioned so far is the fumble he had earlier in the fourth quarter, which short-circuited
exactly.
A Giants drive.
I mean, two of those five turnovers go squarely on his shoulders. The fumble, obviously, he comes back and fumbles the ball after he makes that huge catch down the sideline to run in for the touchdown. And give the ball right back to Seattle, put them right in field goal position. I think down on like the 35-yard line or something like that. And then, you know, obviously the interception, I mean, you could kind of put it on Eli's shoulders. He threw the ball behind him somewhat, but I mean, Victor Cruz, he's obviously got some more to learn. He should have saw that the ball's behind him and maybe tried to bat it down instead of making an acrobatic catch. Because I mean, I was sitting down in that end zone yesterday. I was at the game and he clearly just batted the ball right into the defender's hands. And, you know, obviously a guy took it back for six, and that was the end of the game right there. But, like I said, he's obviously a big got enough talent to be a big playmaker in the offense and, you know, just still got a lot to learn. He's a young player. I'm going to hang up and listen to you guys talk.
Hey, appreciate the call, man.
Appreciate the phone call. Yeah, the Giants were up 22-19, just piggybacking off of that point. And it was 3rd-and-7 from the Giants 20. And he threw it to Cruz for 5 yards, fumbled it. So the Seahawks get it at the Giants 25, and then they settled for a Hauschka 43-yard field goal, which ultimately tied the game. And, you know, those are turning points, because if the Giants continue their drive, you know, you would assume perhaps they walk away with points and cushion the lead and force the Seahawks into a situation where they need to get in the end zone as opposed to settle for a game-tying field goal. So, you know, those are the things, the ebbs and flows of a game that ultimately can lead to wins or losses.
And, again, it's the turnovers. It comes down to turnovers. Again, and I hate to oversimplify this, folks, but sometimes it really is that simple. And, Lance, I want to touch on some of the defense stuff that you mentioned before, and you're right. The Giants could have easily been down 2 touchdowns in the first half, or it could have been a tie game. And I think it's interesting. You mentioned the 2 Giant turnovers inside their own 20. OC made the great play on Marshawn Lynch to get the strip, and then they also stripped, I believe it was Jackson, to a short circuit one of those drives in the red zone. Aaron Ross had an interception as well in that first half. So the Giants' defense certainly did step up and bail the offense out of some of those mistakes. But there are also a couple opportunities the defense have had in the first half that they didn't take advantage of. Deion Grant had that potential interception on the Seahawks' first drive, which he dropped and went through his hands. And he had another opportunity later in the game trying to undercut a route down the sideline. The ball kind of sailed just over his head. And the defense, though they made a couple plays, they had the opportunity to force a couple more turnovers, because clearly Tavares Jackson's not the most accurate quarterback in the world, and the Giants didn't take advantage of a couple of his bad
throws.
Well,
you could also point to opportunities in the Cardinals game that even though they won, Boley had a dropped interception, I believe, in that game. So that's been a trend somewhat, where they've left turnovers off the board, in essence, where that could have been a game changer.
In fact, I believe Tavares Jackson had one over the middle earlier in the game, too. You just mentioned it. I believe it was a tip
where
pass,
Boley,
and it kind of knocked off a couple of the linebackers' hands.
And I think there was one also that, correct me if I'm wrong, Linval Joseph deflected. I don't know if anyone was in a position, but clearly they had a lot of deflections here or there that, you know, if somebody's in the right spot, you know, they could take it the other way. So you're right. I mean, it's all about capitalizing on the opportunities, especially when you're going up against a quarterback, like you said, that has the mobility factor but does not have the consistency factor over the course of his career. And you know, the other thing to look at this game from a big picture perspective is you knocked out a starting quarterback that was questionable to begin with to go up against the backup that you murdered last season when Matt Hasselbeck didn't even start, and Whitehurst does just enough to lead the Seahawks to a winning drive, which leads up to a bigger picture in terms of where the defense dropped the ball, John, something that didn't receive a lot of publicity yesterday. That play in which Doug Baldwin scores the touchdown. Okay, you have an offsides issue there.
I can't believe we've even gotten more calls
about
that,
I know,
to be honest with you.
This was a big game changer.
Huge play.
You know, where a Giants player is offsides, and you know, even Justin Tuck's running on the field trying to argue that a ref blew the whistle, so it should have stopped.
Which didn't happen, by the way.
And Doug Baldwin continues his route and gets a wide-open touchdown.
And you know what, though? And in the post-game in the locker room, talking to Antro Roll here and Aaron Ross, they all kind of said, yeah, we all thought we heard a whistle and we stopped playing. But if you take a look at the video, Aaron Ross and Antro Roll both cover for the first 2 or 3 seconds of that possession. They did not stop playing. They played through that whistle that I'm sure they all thought they heard one, but they played through it. And they just released Doug Baldwin to no one. It's like they thought they had a safety over the top, and Ross and Roll both released Doug Baldwin, and he was wide open. And I get, you know, you think a whistle blew and they might have blown the play, that's fine. A, you always play through the whistle. Everyone knows that, especially if it's not a dead ball penalty on the offense. You have to. But there was clearly a miscommunication of some kind in the secondary that allowed the big play to happen. It's the same type of mistake that happened at the end of last season with all the big plays, and it's the same type of mistake we saw Week 1 against Washington when they complained about a lot of miscommunications in the secondary. These are veteran guys. They're the same guys. You can't have a situation where you just release a receiver to nobody for a 27-yard touchdown. That's the ball game.
You know what it reminded me of, John? Remember last year against the Cowboys or maybe it was 2 years ago, Kenny Phillips gets an interception off Jason Wooden's foot
yeah.
in Dallas, mm-hmm. and the ref blew the whistle in that instance. But Phillips still played it, and they could have walked away with a touchdown in that situation. So it's just it's another example of you never know when the official is blowing the whistle or not. Play the see the play-through conclusion, in essence. You always need to see if you can take advantage of an opportunity like that. And there was no excuse, regardless of the whistle was blown or not. You never know. They may look in on a review or some sort, and it could go in favor of the Giants. So I don't think there's any excuse in the book that any Giants defensive player could throw out there to explain what happened.
And Coach Coughlin didn't use an excuse in the postgame press conference. He said, look, I don't care what you hear. You play through the play. If you see everyone going, you play through the play. And that's what you have to do. That's what Coach Coughlin said in his press conference. That's where I'm getting my thing from. That's where Lance is getting his thing from. And by the way, that second Giants forced fumble was on the little quarterback, the fullback dive play to Michael Robinson. They tried it for the third consecutive time into the goal line. And Rocky Bedard made a great play to force the fumble and recover it. But you mentioned Charlie Whitehurst, Lance, and say what you want about the defense. They allowed the Seahawks, who are not a very good offensive team, to get 420 yards of offense. 420. Up 22-19, they allowed the Seahawks, and up 25-22, excuse me, they allowed the Seahawks to drive the ball from their own 20-yard line, 80 yards for a touchdown, with
in
Charlie Whitehurst at quarterback. The drive was 2 minutes and 12 seconds, 7 plays, 80 yards. All of it was through the air except for one Leon Washington 3-yard run off tackle. That simply cannot be allowed to happen.
Part of that is not challenging the receivers at the line of scrimmage, John. You know, I mean, Doug Baldwin had a lot of routes. Now, I don't remember every single play exactly the coverage, but, you know, where he was just getting clean slants or clean routes to the sidelines, you've got to challenge them. And a lot of people are going to throw out, who is Doug Baldwin? How could we let Doug Baldwin run wild? Yes, he's an undrafted rookie, but you know what?
Out of Stanford, by the way. Smart kid.
I'm not questioning his, you know, academic resume here. Certainly, he gets kudos for that. But he led the team in receiving yards and receptions coming into the game.
So also the team's most targeted receiver as well.
So it's no secret that he's a safety valve or a security blanket for the two quarterbacks.
And I could tell you, talking to players in the locker room during the week, everyone mentioned Doug Baldwin. These guys knew about him. They knew he was a threat. Perry Fuel talked about him in his press conference last week. He actually brought him up. He wasn't even asked about Doug Baldwin. And he brought up Doug Baldwin on his own. So the Giants were not caught by surprise by this guy. They knew coming into this game that he was a threat.
And listen, it's not the first receiver that's come from an unknown area. I'm not saying Stanford's unknown. And then his Marquise Colston from Hofstra.
Victor Cruz.
Yeah, I mean, there's playmakers
Miles
out there.
Name
just
it.
Because a guy is not a top draft pick doesn't mean that you just underestimate him and say that he's an unknown guy. How did the Giants let him run wild? He's proven through the first couple of games that he's a reliable target. End of discussion. So you got to take him seriously, and you got to challenge him, regardless of whether he's a name wideout.
On a separate note, by the way, do you know who Victor Cruz reminds me of, actually? He reminds me a lot of Miles Austin. To me, they're very similar guys. They're both very good after the catch. They came out of small schools, both Jersey guys. They both kind of came out of nowhere. Took a little while to get going. Victor Cruz is very good after the catch, just like Miles Austin is. He is able to go up and get the ball and makes acrobatic catches. I think those two are pretty similar receivers.
That's a very good comparison. Great athleticism. It goes without saying that the two of them. And they make most fantasy owners happy.
Let's go back to the phones. Well, Victor Cruz is definitely making some fantasy owners happy this year, no question. 201-939-4513. Back to the phones, John in Pennsylvania. What's up, Johnny?
Johnny there, man.
Hey, I'm here.
What's up, John?
What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about our third down conversion problem and our red zone offense.
Yeah.
I feel like this has been a problem throughout all of last season, and now this season it's starting to show up. We can't score an offense, and our third down conversions are not there.
Our red zone offense was actually pretty good last year, but the third down conversion you are 100% right on.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we just have a problem scoring sometimes, and I don't know if it's the play calling or if it's Eli to blame. We just can't get our third down conversions down.
Well, I'll tell you what, John, I'm going to go back to what we mentioned off the top of the show. When you're in third and eight and third and nine and third and ten every time, it's hard to convert third down. So if you can't run the ball on first and second down, you're putting your quarterback and your offensive line in a tough spot.
Yeah.
All right, Johnny, man, we appreciate the call. John's very depressed, I understand.
You know what's amazing? You look at the first drive of the game for the Giants when they scored that touchdown to answer the Seahawks, and it start. This is a typical drive that you want to mimic, okay? First and 10, Manning scrambles for 2 yards, and then they stayed committed to the run.
Well, obviously, you want to start every drive with an Eli Manning two-yard run.
I mean, maybe that was a bad example. Excuse me. I know. Thank you for highlighting that.
No problem.
But then they went back-to-back runs for Ahmad Bradshaw, and they got 18 yards on consecutive plays to make a manageable second and 5. And obviously, the passing game benefited from the running game. Now, you know, obviously, the running game fell off the face of the universe after that.
Yeah,
I mean,
they couldn't
get a yard if they bought it. But, you know, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for the run to set up the pass, and you're looking for the run to get you in manageable downs, whether it be second or third down. So to answer the question as to the problem with why they can't execute on third down, it's not the play calling. How many plays, okay, do you think Kevin Gilbride has for third and 26? I mean, they clearly practice that every single day.
Little hook and ladder?
Oh,
perhaps?
I mean that is a very popular focal point to practice every week. How many plays have for third and 15 in their playbook? I mean, come on, put it in perspective here.
You got to run the ball. You got to get in the third and manageable, and you're right. And it's funny, if you take away those first two runs by Bradshaw that gained 18 yards, the rest of the game he had 15 carries for 40 yards. That's under a 3-yard average. That's terrible. And we talked to Chris Snee in the locker room yesterday, and obviously you saw the reports. He suffered a concussion last night, yesterday. Hopefully he'll be able to get back in time for the game on Sunday. We'll see. They'll obviously go through all the tests this week. Hopefully try to get him back on the field. But he said it in the locker room last week. We're tired of looking at the numbers and seeing 3 yards a carry. We're tired of seeing it. It's unacceptable. It has to get better. And that's exactly what we're saying here, 100%. Right. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We got a bunch of them up here. We'll get to them in just a second. We got some good stuff going on. But let's go back to the phones. Go to Johnny in New York. What's up, Johnny?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up, bud?
Oh, my goodness. I'm so disappointed in yesterday's performance. You have no idea.
Understandable.
You know, I just don't understand. Ever since Coughlin's been the coach, I've been a Giant fan. I have season tickets, all of this. I talked to you guys before.
Of course.
It seems like when they're on the road, They come out of the gate like they're shot up on methamphetamine, and when they're home, they walk out like they're on Quaaludes.
And honestly,
they had no chance to win that game yesterday.
See, John, I know some people are saying that the Giants didn't take the Seahawks seriously and they took it easy, but I gotta be honest. I thought I saw effort. I didn't think I saw a malaise, lackadaisical play. I thought the team went out there and tried. I just don't think they executed well.
Well, I think their game plan yesterday obviously was like a bend but not break defense, because a lot of the first half they only rushed four guys and they really weren't getting too much pressure on that, you know, quarterback Jackson. And he, you know, he's really not that good. If you give him that much time and play a zone, which the Giants really aren't that good at playing zone, you know, these guys find the spot. And how many third downs in a row can they make? You know, with no pressure on the quarterback. And since Coughlin's been the coach, we haven't been a good home team at all. You got to admit that. We're just not a good home team.
Well, I
go to every game, and there's just a big difference the way we play on the road and we play at home.
Well, they didn't get off to a very good start against the Cardinals, though, and that was a road game.
And the Seahawks,
right,
by the way, only—
at least they came back and won. And on the road, you know, you're on the road, so any win on the road is great. But at home, you got to come out like you want to win right off the bat, and they just don't do it.
Seahawks, by the way, third down conversions only 4 of 15 yesterday, 27%. That's actually a pretty good job.
That line that they have now, they made a big mistake getting rid of those two guys.
Well, good.
You know,
remember, John.
Their line is terrible.
Hey, look, John,
they hit,
I agree.
They hit where? 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage for a safety as he was catching the ball. How does that? I've never seen other teams that happen to other teams.
Hey, look, John, you're right. The offensive line is not playing well, but remember, Richie Seibert's still not healthy enough to play, so even if the Giants did hold on to him, he wouldn't be on the field right now. And Sean O'Hara hasn't gotten picked up by anybody else in the league. And remember, the Jets were short their starting center for 2 weeks, all right?
Right.
He had a high ankle sprain, and you saw the mess they were on the offensive line.
They're very familiar.
He's
got to make all the calls
and
on the line and everything.
And those guys
even the guy that we got in free agency, He's not that good.
He didn't play yesterday.
It's not like we picked up an all-star center. We picked up an average center to replace an all-pro.
John, he didn't play yesterday, though. How can you blame David Boss? He was inactive.
Well, I'm not
saying I'm
blaming him. I'm just saying that even when he's in there, it's not that big of a difference. I don't think he's the problem. I think the line in general is the problem.
Hey, look, John, and I think you're right. The offensive line, and thank you very much for the call. We love your passion. The offensive line has not done the job they had to do this year. And it's not just even the running game, which you touched on a lot. Eli Manning has faced a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
He's been hit a lot. He's been knocked down a lot. He's been sacked a lot. Is some of that holding the ball longer so you don't throw the pick? Sure. But he does not have the same amount of time to throw as he's had the last couple of years.
I mean, there was a play where Hargrove got to him.
Untouched.
Yeah. I mean, literally, he didn't even have time to even grab the ball from the center. So the penetration that is taking place prior to the snap is remarkable, what the offensive line is giving up. So, I mean, it goes without saying that there's issues all across the board. But, you know, a lot of that has to do with the communication issues. And clearly yesterday, you know, and I'm not trying to dig deep to make excuses here, but they went back to a game of musical chairs a bit like we saw last season, John.
Especially once Snee went out, yeah.
You know, Booth was moved around, Cordell came in. You know, so, you know, that has to be taken into consideration. That leads to issues. It, you know, listen, the Packers, too, last night, if you watch the Falcons game, Clifton, one of their most reliable offensive linemen, got hurt, and then Aaron Rodgers all of a sudden took multiple sacks.
He did.
Took them time to then get on the same page. I mean, that's just a typical strategy or adjustment period that most offensive lines go through. But I thought that was an excellent point that you brought up, the fact that there's been plenty of teams out there that have been in needs of center. And they have not gone after Sean O'Hara. So before we start calling for the Steve Smiths and the Kevin Bosses to come back and the Seiberts and the O'Haras, keep in mind there have been teams that have had needs for those positions and have not gone after these players. So that says something that the public doesn't know.
Though I will say one thing, too. A lot of people have kind of, you know, downgraded Sean O'Hara's performance the last couple of years. Oh, maybe he really wasn't that good. Maybe he was overrated. Well, you know, him and Richie aren't around all of a sudden. You're not running the ball as well. Maybe you should appreciate what you have and not kill these guys, because when they're hurt and they're not here anymore, then all of a sudden you want them back. 201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Len is down in Maryland. What's up, Len?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Good show as usual, especially after yesterday.
Thanks, Len. Good morning.
Len. Yep.
What a mess. Listen, a couple of points, and then I want to hear your comments. This 4-2-5 defensive alignment with multiple zone coverage looks, it's just not working. I think we got to go back to the traditional 4-3. I know we're going to be playing the rookie in the middle. He's going to have some limitations, but let the kid play downhill anyway. We just can't handle this zone coverage. I mean, we're seeing it week after week. Well, I don't think this 4-2-5 is working.
Well, you know what, Len? In fairness, Len, the last 2 weeks, the pass defense has been pretty good. It has been. It was good against Philadelphia, and it was pretty good against Arizona. The run defense, you can argue. I can buy that. But the pass defense the last 2 weeks has been pretty good.
Well, there's a lot of yardage in the middle of the field. And, how do guys get mixed up on coverage? I mean, we're sitting out there with Baldwin. I mean, they're trying to figure out who they're going to cover. I mean, come on. You can't make mistakes like that. I think we got to go back to a more traditional defense that with a 4-3. 4-3-4. I know there's limitations in the rookie at middle linebacker, but I think we got to go back. I think we can seal the edge a little better that way, too. We're getting killed on the edge. Oh, my God. We're getting killed on the edge. I mean, guys are coming around that on that corner just off the edge. The linebackers are – I mean, we're getting caught inside. I don't understand how that can be. Second point, your point earlier in your show, you talked about special teams play. You know, we're talking about, it's not just this season. I mean, we're talking about last season and the season before that. There is just generation-long mediocrity on special teams play. I mean, overall yeah. Special teams play. I'm not just talking about one phase of it. I'm not talking about Dodgers punting or times missing. The overall special teams play is more than just season. It goes back 2 and 3 seasons. And one last comment on Eli.
Sure.
I think you guys have heard me say this before. Eli is Eli. What you see is what you get. The good news for me, he's our Eli. I'd like to hear your comments on some of that. Hey, guys, have a good day.
All right, Len, appreciate it. What do you want to hit first there, Laz? Well, we have a smorgasbord of topics, as you would like to say.
My favorite word.
I know.
You're pulling out my jargon
here,
Shruck. I like it. I actually want to piggyback off the – base defense, you know, nickelback formation that he was talking about.
Not the band, by the way. Yes.
Exactly. Well, that's a whole other story.
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong, John, but I thought Perry Fuel was questioned very detailed on this throughout the course of the week.
Correct.
And he made the claim that a lot of the big runs were actually when they were in their base defense.
And their nickel D was actually better against the run than their 4-3
has
been.
Now, I don't have the breakdown from yesterday's game. We'll actually have to bring Paul Dottino in once he looks at the tape. So I can't speak to where Marshawn Lynch is, that big 40-something run. I don't remember what formation they were in at the time.
Me neither.
But I'm just going by what Perry Fuel has said and the trends in the last couple of games, which is, you know, when your extra secondary player has been in, they actually have not given up the big runs. It's been more so when they're in their, you know, traditional defensive formation.
And Coach Coughlin had a very spirited back and forth with Mike Garofalo on the Wednesday press conference last week, actually. And Mike asked Coach very specifically, do you think you need to play more base 4-3 in order to stop the run better? And Coach goes, why would we do that? Well, and Mike says, you know, it's common thought in the NFL that, you know, a 4-3 with three linebackers is better against the run than playing the nickel. And Coach goes, well, you should ask the Packers about that because they play nickel all the time and that's their best run defense. And he was basically implying that we're better against the run in the nickel based on matchups. If the team's in a, you know, three wide receiver set or whatever type of formation the other team's in. And look, we're honest here. We're not sitting here breaking down the high 50 coaches tape, counting formations, average yards based on certain formations. We're just going on what the coaching staff is saying. And the coaching staff isn't going to come out and lie outright to people. So we're just going on what people are saying here. So that doesn't seem to be the problem. And Lance, he was killing the zone defense too. And we got that a lot the first couple of weeks when the Giants had issues against, you know, the Redskins with the zone. I thought the zone defense, until this week, and they had some issues this week, against the Cardinals and against the Eagles, they prevented the big play to big receivers. I thought they did a pretty good job.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's hard for me to really pick apart, you know, the zone defense. A lot of people also have been picking on Greg Jones, the fact that, you know, he's a young guy.
He barely plays.
But yeah, so it's hard. I mean, granted, Deion Grant is getting more playing time, you know, clearly, because I think they're relying more on the veterans who are more familiar with the system, given the youth of the linebacker core. I think that's another factor to throw out there as to why maybe you don't see as often the traditional defensive set. Remember, you know, with Jonathan Goff out for the year, you know, it's going to be a learning curve this season for the Jaquan Williams, the Greg Joneses, the Mark Herzlicks, who you don't even see a lot of. You know, they're still digesting the system. It's not like you can just, you know, linebacker spot, especially the middle spot, is not an easy position to all of a sudden adapt to. You know, oftentimes, you're the one calling the play. They actually have Michael Boley playing the quarterback of the defense now because they don't want to put those type of expectations on a rookie linebacker. So, you know, that's where injuries clearly are playing a role on this team. And I hate bringing up injuries because I know a lot of people are like, listen, we're 5 weeks into the season. How many more times are we going to bring up the injury bug as an excuse as to why the Giants are not executing on both sides of the football? So I'm not really bringing that to the forefront and saying that that's an issue. But you've got to at least go back to it at times when you're talking about key positions on the field.
Well, if you have less talented players on the field, you're going to have problems. That's just a simple fact of life. And you mentioned Deion Grant being on the field more, and he missed some opportunities in that game yesterday. You know, whether he's, you know, just getting a little bit older, he had that interception opportunity in the end zone. Let's be honest, he should have made that play. And then he also had the sack on Tavares Jackson off the blind side. Instead of hitting Jackson on his right throwing shoulder, which probably would have jarred the ball loose, he hits him on the inside shoulder, on the left shoulder, and Tavares Jackson is able to hold on to the ball, and that's a potential turnover that the Giants missed an opportunity on, which we talked about earlier in the show. And
got to go for that pectoral muscle.
I love about going for the pec, but you got to go for the arm with the ball. Carl Banks made a big deal about this during our radio broadcast. He made an awesome point. When you're going after the quarterback and you have a free shot from the blind side, you always go after the throwing arm. Because even if you don't hit the arm itself, that impact on the back of that right shoulder will jar the ball loose and it will force a turnover. 201-939-4513. We have some Twitter stuff here too. So I'm going to list a couple Twitter questions here and we'll get through it. We talked about the third down conversions already. That's from Trini, 114, just inexcusable being 1 of 14. No doubt about it. Already touched on that. You're on a lot of third and longs.
Well, they were 1 of 12. Let's give them credit. Let's give them some credit. Come on.
My bad. 1 of 12, much, much better than 1 for 14.
Those numbers look a lot better.
But I think, and this is one of our great Twitter files. He always sends us stuff during the show. Giants Big Blue Rocks and Rocky 22. He lists a myriad of issues, penalties, turnovers, third down conversions, Baldwin wide open. It's a team-wide loss. And I think that's a great point because the Giants really did, Lance, have breakdowns all over the map. And all those things really combined and put together that turned into this disappointing loss.
Yeah, you know, I mean, listen, we could sit here and pinpoint, you know, the blame on specific players. But top to bottom, there was a lot of contributing factors in yesterday's performance. Though one bright spot that I do want to bring up, and this is related to another tweet, is from Lion Jeffrey, who says, Pasco in, Heinoski out. I know he's a tight end, but he's a stud out of the backfield, blocks open holes, and can catch the ball. And I thought, John, late in the game, when Pasco took over. Now, Heinoski was out, by the way, because of a neck stinger. He was not out because the coaches didn't think he was effective.
Correct.
So that's important to note in case you were watching the game and the personnel in. But you're right. Pasco last year, when he took over for Hedgecock, I thought was a very consistent blocker out of the backfield. And clearly they need an extra weapon to help out the offensive line. And it seemed that the offense picked up some consistency, picked up some steam when he was in. So moving forward, that may be an option that they want to go to. Another thing I want to point out, John, that I thought when the offense has been more effective is when they go to a two tight end set.
And they ran the ball well, too, with Andrews and Ballard in the game.
There's a tremendous difference in terms of execution.
They did. And I think early in the game, when they got those two good runs to start the game that you mentioned, they had Stacey Andrews in there, and they ran a two tight end set. And Poppin Banks made that point during the radio broadcast as well, that they thought that the Giants did run the ball a lot better with two tight ends. A couple other things, and we touched on this earlier, Lance. We can touch on it again real quick. Willie B, 540, what reasonable explanation can be given for a shotgun throw from the 10 on first down with 125 left in Seattle with three timeouts? And I know a lot of people wanted the Giants to run the ball there. And again, if they didn't have that false start at the 5, I think they would have ran the ball in that first possession. But keep in mind, we brought up the stat. The Giants, after Bradshaw's first run of the game, were averaging fewer than 3 yards a carry. It's just terrible. And you don't want to get yourself in the second and third and long. Victor Cruz slips on the break. The ball gets deflected. It's an unfortunate thing. Ahmad Bradshaw was wide open on that play in the flat, by the way, which an earlier caller brought up. But I can't get on the play calling there because if Cruz catches, if he doesn't slip and he catches the ball, no one thinks twice about it.
Listen, the only way they were going to get their running backs moving in yesterday's game, John, is what you just alluded to, dumping it to them off in the flat and then having them run. I mean, let's be honest. That was the only way to get Bradshaw going. He was not getting any holes because the penetration was coming at Eli Manning right after the snap. So, you know, I mean, as much as Giants fans want to point to, they should have run the ball, they should have run the ball, they should have run the ball. You know, they tried throughout the entire game, gain some positive yardage. Don't get into third and longs, and then there's reason to argue on first and 5 that they should have run the ball.
No question. I want to get to one more thing, and I'm going to try to pronounce this name right. I hope I'm not going to butcher it here. I think it's Sherazad Ogurto, and she wants to know about Jake Ballard, and she wants the Giants to use him as a wide receiver more. And it's funny, Lance, you know, all the questions about whether or not he could be a receiver, and I think in a lot of ways he's almost been a better receiver than he's been a blocker so far this year. He's shown some good hands. He hasn't dropped many passes since that first week, and I think teams will start focusing on Ballard a little bit more. Let's see if he can still produce with teams paying attention to him, because we've just seen teams literally releasing him wide open in the secondary. No one's near the guy. But you have to be happy with what Ballard's doing stepping in a tight end.
You have to wonder this, Schmelk. Does the game plan change a bit now, given the concern of the offensive line? Does the tight end, and Tom Coughlin, remember, likes his tight ends to block more so than become passing threats.
No question.
Is there going to be more of a focus to have the tight end stay on the line as opposed to letting him run free?
And even mass protecting to protect Eli Manning.
I mean, that, you know, and that could limit Ballard's production, at least in the immediacy of the next couple of games.
No, that's a fair point. All right, we're going to close out the show with your calls, and Lance and I will very quickly go over our picks, which were both kind of mediocre this past week. We didn't really do too well, but we'll touch on them anyway.
Let's John's the not Texas. Boasting anymore. No.
Say hello to Victor. I've still got the lead on you, by the way. Victor, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing this morning? What's up, Lance, buddy?
Hey, Victor, how's everything, man?
Good to hear from you, Victor. How are you?
Hey, good. Hey, you know, all great points about, you know, what the Giants did, and I totally agree. You know, this is a team loss from top to bottom, and that's starting with coaching all the way down to players. You know, starting with the special teams, we never get anything from the special teams. I agree with the caller. This has been an issue for the last 5 years. If you look it up, we only have about 5 punt returns in the last 6 years for touchdowns. It's just ridiculous. The defense, yes, they're young, but, you know, you got old guys in there. You know, you got Deion Grant who's getting burnt on every play there. You know, the Giants want to settle on his experience, but, you know, his youth is not there anymore, and he's going to get burnt on it, and they're going to exploit that. But Perry Fuel is letting guys like Charlie Whitehurst and Tavares Jackson look like Tom Brady and freaking Joe Montana out there. It's just so frustrating to Giants fans because, you know, seeing what we did to that perennial dream team in Philly, we shut down two of those receivers and just allowed one, Jerry Macklin, to get off. I mean, it's just so frustrating when you see that. And going away from the tight end in that game was, I didn't understand it. I mean, we had so much success with Jake Ballard. I was excited, but we just went away from it. And, Lance, you're totally right with the run game. To me, if you can't run the ball, you need to run it in, you know, dump-off passes. That's just like a handoff. You know, we didn't utilize that. Where was the screen to counteract that fast rush up the middle? I mean, you got it constantly. You know what? You got to make the adjustment. You got to say, okay, I'm going to use their speed against them. Let's throw a screen here. And it's just frustrating to me to see the Giants play down to different teams. You know, they play up for the high teams, and they play low for the low teams. It's just frustrating. And then we got the Bills coming in who aren't those Bills from back in the days. You got to worry
good.
About
yeah.
Fitzpatrick. And you got to worry about the running game.
Fred Jackson is excellent.
Tough running team and a pass team. So that's going to play action. I mean, they're going to kill us there. So we got to fix this whole thing right now. And you can't go into the bye week losing two consecutive games. It's just not good for the psyche of a player and coaches.
Yeah, because, I mean, listen, two straight losses is going to linger for another week. So it's a situation you certainly don't want to be.
And the heck with the losses lingering, look at the second half schedule. Yeah. You can't afford, just based on the teams you have coming up on the schedule, to lose two straight going into the bye. You're going to be in a ton of trouble. Victor, awesome job as always. You're one of my favorite callers. Thanks a lot, man. And he made a lot of great points there. I'm going to touch on one where, you know, you would play down to our competition. We beat a dream team like the Eagles.
They don't want to be known as the dream team, by the way. I'm not sure if everybody got the memo. But
pause. The Eagles aren't any good. They can't beat anybody. They're 1-4. Let's not hang our hat on the Eagles win like it's some kind of grand accomplishment anymore.
It's a good point.
It's not. 1-4. The Rams haven't won a game either. They stink. That's not a grand accomplishment either. Yesterday, the Cardinals going to Minnesota against a team that hasn't beaten anybody all year, they're down 28-0. So it's not like the three wins that the Giants have chalked up this year have been against. They've been against teams with a combined two victories.
You know, it's funny.
They're not great wins.
If you compare this to the college football system, John, on strength of schedule, all of a sudden the Giants would dip in the rankings because you're right. The wins that they had is against a level of talent that before the season looked like it was going to be tough games. But now that you see five or six games on the plate, you know, the Eagles win and the Rams, who were supposed to be a vastly improved team, you know, is still searching for its first win.
And the Rams have had a tough schedule.
True.
I shouldn't say
and
that. The Rams do have talent.
Grafford's
a good quarterback. They have a good running game, though Steven Jackson's been banged up. Cadillac Williams is a good backup. I mean, they've had a very tough schedule. But, you know, you don't make too big of a deal about the Eagles game. It's clear they have their own issues in Philadelphia. And any win in the NFL is a good win. All right, you can lose any given Sunday with the stupid old cliche if you don't play well, and any win is a good win. And I'm not saying it's not. But I really – and the reason I made that point, Lance, is that I don't think the Giants took the Seahawks lightly. I really don't. I saw effort. I didn't see guys floating around not doing a whole lot. I did see effort out there on the field.
You know, another reason why you can't throw a lot of credence into the Eagles' win is, listen, there were seasons the last couple of years where the Giants got off to fast starts – and then collapsed at the end of the year. Do you think after the 10-6 season last year, the Giants are saying, well, you know, we got a great win over the Buffalo Bills in week two? you're right. You can't live in the past. As far as effort, to answer your question, listen, they came out strong on their first drive and immediately answered the Seahawks. So for me to sit here and say the Giants came out flat.
And they weren't ready.
I can't buy that. I can't make that argument.
Yeah, to me, I can't, and a lot of people want to put this on the coaching staff. I can't do it. To me, this is not a coaching issue. To me, this was an execution on the field issue.
Run the ball, and then we won't be discussing this type of situation. Run the ball. I'm not trying to make it as if I have the quick, easy fix for this team, but if you run the ball even 50% effectively, you're going to add some balance to your offense.
And a lot of these other problems will go away pretty quick. All right, two more calls to close out the show. Let's go to Mr. Big Blue in Queens. What's up, Mr. Big Blue?
Hey, what's up, guys? Good morning.
I'm sure you're feeling a little bit blue this morning, Mr. Big Blue.
Yeah, man. Hats off to Victor Cruz. He's definitely going to develop to be a great player. He made some little mistakes, but, you know, he's going to learn from that and grow better from it. Here's the question I got for you guys. How effective can we be against the Bills? Like, what's the best game plan that we can get a win out there against the Bills?
Well, Fred Jackson's a huge threat. Listen, if the Giants have given up over 100 yards rushing three straight weeks, Fred Jackson's coming off 111 and a touchdown off the Eagles, and he's a big passing threat. Don't underestimate just him as a runner.
80 yards and I think six catches through the air this past week.
And remember, the Bills are a West Coast offense, okay? They go a lot of three wide-out sets.
A lot of spread stuff.
Which means, John, that Antrell Roll will likely have to defend the slot receiver again, and David Nelson is a big guy out of Florida.
6'5".
He's like the Doug Baldwins of the world, another guy that no one heard of. He's went undrafted. He's fast, and he's big, and he can certainly take advantage of safeties.
And we got to be able to score with them, too, because they put up big points.
They do.
Points.
The Bills will score next week. You're 100% right. The Giants are going to have to score with them.
We're going to have to score with them. Eli has a little more better decisions with the ball and limit them turnovers, man. We should have won that game. Them turnovers killed us.
All right.
Limit them turnovers.
Mr. Big Blue, you're right.
Productive on the returns on the special teams, too. Get a better field position. And like you said, running the ball, we'll get our balance back. We got to get more productive on that running game.
All right, Mr. Big Blue, we appreciate the call, man. And, you know, that's just all stuff that we talked about during the show, and you're right. And by the way, you could argue that Fred Jackson's been the best running back in football this year. That argument can be made. You know, Chris, I got to look at the yardage leaders. I'll bring those up.
Well, from a consistency standpoint,
I think he might lead the league in rushing. And
Darren McFadden still
is McFadden ahead of him, you think?
Yeah.
Still, we'll take a look at that.
I mean, he didn't have a big game
yesterday. I do think Fred Jackson, like you mentioned, I do think he leads all running backs in receptions this year, except for maybe Darren Sproles. I'll have to take a look. Sproles might have more catches than him. I'm not sure. Our final call, let's go down.
He's behind Adrian Peterson,
Peterson's ahead of Fred Jackson.
Peterson's at 498, Jackson's at 480.
But the fact that he's even in that conversation is very, very telling. All right, let's go back to the calls, our final call of the show. You guys done a great job this morning. We thank you for listening and giving us a call, by the way. Excellent work by the fans. Herb's in Philadelphia. Herb, what's up?
Hey, guys.
What up, Herb?
I just had a couple. How you doing? I'm from Philly, but I'm a Big Blue fan. I just had a couple of questions.
Sure.
Do we think, or is there a chance that we could run that three wideout set more? And once they use the that play in the Philadelphia game, the wheel route, they stop using it. And what's up with Sean O'Hara, man? Our offensive line is not cohesive this year for some inordinate reason, but. You know, I think those are the major issues, and our pass defense. You know, we have to pick that up because Charlie Whitehurst is a second or third stringer. I just believe we have more to give than the Charlie Whitehurst and Tavares Jackson. Thanks. Listen up.
Appreciate the phone call. You know, I love when the callers throw out the term and out the wheel route. I mean, next we're going to be calling for the horse and buggy.
What are you talking about?
The terminology that,
it's a wheel route. That's the name of the route.
I know, but I'm saying the complexities that people are calling for the offense to get more creative.
You know, I have a great new job for you, Lance. This is what I want your job to be.
I don't know where this is going.
You're
going
to start naming the plays. So we're going to figure out every week a play, and I want you to come up with a name for it, okay? So I will come in here every Monday, pick out one play from the game that I think is a little bit out of the box and creative, and I'm going to have you come up with a name for the play.
All right, we'll put the play up maybe on the TV. We'll get the telestrator out, too, and we can break it down. How about that?
That's great for a radio call-in show. I'm sure fans will really enjoy the telestrator on the audio-only podcast.
I think we have enough play-by-play experience between the two of us that we can telestrate the picture. But getting back to the points that our latest caller brought up, listen, I think we addressed the Sean O'Hara issue. The fact that, I don't think he's fully healthy right now, and that's a reason why no other team has brought him into the mix, and one of the reasons reasons why the Giants didn't bring him back to have some more depth on the offensive line. That's why they went out and got David Boss, who, remember, was inactive yesterday, and that's another factor as to why the offensive line didn't produce. As far as the passing game issues, you know, I mean, granted, it is troubling when a guy like Charlie Whitehurst can march down the field so easily. Part of that is his wideouts making plays, and the fact, as I said, I'm going to keep going back to it, and I'll repeat myself, you've got to challenge the guys at the line of scrimmage. I mean, that's part of throwing the wideouts off balance, okay? If you let Doug Baldwin run his route, Whitehurst is going to expect him to be in a specific position, and he's going to get him the ball.
Timing's easy.
Yeah. You know, McCoy, too, another guy who replaced Zach Miller, who was knocked out with a concussion. You know, he was wide open at times. You've got to challenge these guys. That's the bottom line. And that will throw a quarterback off his rhythm. And that's what you want to do against a guy like Whitehurst. You're right. If they allow Whitehurst to do that, you can imagine what a guy like Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers
or Drew Brees, yeah, all guys the Giants are going to play
up on the schedule, yeah,
later in the year. You could throw, you know, you
it's
could
a
throw
factor.
When they play Vic again, then they got Tony Romo two more times this year, assuming he stays healthy the way his offense let him get beat up. But you're right. It's something that's going to have to get fixed. All right, before we say goodbye here, Lance, and a great show, by the way. It's been a lot of fun, fans. Good job calling in, being a part of it. Let's go through some of our selections from last week. Both you and I are once again wrong on Philadelphia. Our whole theory of they're eventually going to start winning games thing doesn't seem to be working out too well as they fall to 1-4. And really, at this point, you have to start considering that maybe the Eagles aren't as good as people think.
Well, listen,
you know, losing games is one thing and freak things and all that stuff. Maybe they're just not that good.
You want to compare it to the Giants, though? In all honesty, yesterday, they were in a position to win that game as well, or at least tie and force overtime. I mean, Michael Vick throws four interceptions.
And he had two fumbles,
I think, too.
Yeah,
well, Jason Avant had a fumble. Right. You know, I mean, listen, they left points off the board. I mean, that's their biggest issue right now, closing out games and protecting the football. And, you know, the other thing is the margin for error for the Eagles right now, John, is minute. I mean, how many more losses can they afford to give? Because remember, their schedule gets just as tough as the Giants do. And a lot of these divisional teams are going to play one another, and usually everyone beats each other up in the division. So clearly, you know, there's major issues for the Eagles from top to bottom. But you know what? As talented and as many big names as they have, you know what? They don't have the big names in that linebacker core.
Or at safety, and now with Trent Cole out, all of a sudden their defensive line isn't as good. And the way you want to try to structure a defense, you want a really good player or a leader at every level of your defense. And right now they're just not getting the job done. And their three great cornerbacks, where's the production? Where is it?
Well, you know, I'm going to make the argument, and I know this is not PhillyEagles.com, but I don't think they're putting Nnamdi Asomugha in his comfort zone. You know, he's a cover corner. You let him shadow the guy and let him run loose. They're trying to have him buy into a system, in my opinion.
The problem is that Asante Samuel's a guy who's not a cover corner. He's a guy that wants to play zone and get down routes.
Yeah.
So you're right. I mean, it's just like I think it's a chemistry issue. They just don't have. They have a lot of good pieces, but I'm not sure they have the right pieces. And it's going to be interesting to see how that really goes along through the end of the year. Another game that we both got correct is. We both had the Raiders upsetting the Texans, which you both, I guess, should have picked as our upset special, which is really actually a very good job by Oakland, of course.
A very emotional day.
Yeah. The NFL honoring Al Davis, who passed away, the Raiders' all-time, long-time owner. He passed away on Friday. The NFL with a moment of silence in every building on Sunday to honor him. Obviously, you know, we all know about the negatives with Al Davis. We all know about the positives. Obviously, every guy, much like George Steinbrenner, has their greatness and their stuff that maybe isn't so great. But there's no question the impact he's had on the NFL at a very emotional win out there in Oakland. And maybe the Raiders are finally starting to turn this thing around, Lance.
Well, I mean, they should win that division by default at this point. I mean, all those other
don't
teams.
Don't sleep on the Chargers.
I know not to sleep, but they have a lot of, they still have a lot of question marks. They need more consistency on defense to be a top-caliber AFC team. But Broncos have quarterback issues, and the Chiefs have just issues. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah, they have a lot of issues. I think that's fair to say. The one game that we differed on last week were the Steelers and the Titans.
Yes, because we definitely saw Ben Roethlisberger throwing five touchdowns with a sprained left foot.
That's why
I mean that we definitely saw.
That's
coming.
Why I picked the Steelers. I mean, I think I can get the tape up from last Friday and play that for you. I think I said six actually.
Boy, your luck this season is just
luck.
Amazing.
Luck.
I mean, it's not even funny.
Luck's got nothing to do with it.
All right, fair enough. Talk to me in week 16.
And then finally the Well, how about 17 when the season's actually over?
Well, by week 16, I hope to be in front of you.
Oh,
that,
okay,
that's
fair
the
enough.
Set up
fair
for
enough.
The final week.
All right, and then finally our two upset specials. I got a little prematurely cocky last night. I texted Lance with about 2 minutes to go in the second quarter with the Falcons up 14-0, and all I texted was upset ... special exclamation point, and the Falcons proceeded to give up 25 consecutive points, and they lost. So all the Falcon fans out there can call me and blame me for that loss for the Falcons. They've really started the game fast. The Packers, two tackles go out, and the Falcons still could have won that game. I'm not sure if that speaks more to how good Green Bay is or how maybe Atlanta isn't so good this year.
Well, I think it really speaks volumes about how good Green Bay is. I mean, the amount of weapons that Aaron Rodgers has around him. And, you know, they brought up a good point on the broadcast, you know, for those of you who may have watched it, about how quick Aaron Rodgers gets rid of the football compared to Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. I mean, listen, even if you have offensive line issues, that's one way to counter it, John. I mean, listen, you need weapons who are in the right spots to help you in regard to that. But there's a reason why Rodgers can get around offensive line issues. That's because in the snap of a finger, he gets rid of the football.
And then Lance got his upset special game correct with the whopping...
Mr. Supporter of Vegas now criticizing all the upset specials.
The Bengals beating the heavily favorited star-studded Jacksonville Jaguar team in Jacksonville, which obviously one of the toughest places to play in the NFL. That building always packed to the gills with screaming Jaguars fans. And the Bengals did manage to win that game. And, you know, in fairness, all joking aside, the Bengals are, you know, they're putting a nice little season together here.
Andy Dalton's progressing. Them. And, you know, he's got young weapons that are producing. A.J. Green and Jermaine Gresham, I mean, they're producing week in and week out. That's how you separate yourself from being a really young team that makes mistakes. You get production from your rookies.
All right, everybody. You guys were so good today. We went an hour and 15 minutes. It's like free baseball, extra innings. We love it. Lance will be back with you guys on Thursday with Anita Marks. I'll be back with you tomorrow with Michael Eisen. Of course, Big Blue Kickoff Live comes your way every morning on Giants.com from 9:30 to 10:30. We'll do more review of the game tomorrow. We'll also be joined by Ernie Palladino to talk about the Giants, and he'll also talk about his new book, Landry and Lombardi, which you guys should really go out and get. It's a fantastic read. Give it a shot. So make sure you tune in for that tomorrow after we go through the game and take some calls with Michael Eisen from 9:30 to 10. Ernie will join us later on in that show. Melroy will do his little fantasy thing, and we'll have a fun time with that. And, of course, as the week goes along, we'll have a lot of preview of Giants and Bills, a very important game for Big Blue, coming up on Sunday. Lance, any final thoughts?
Well, listen, it's going to be an important week this week in terms of preparation and, you know, having guys step up. Because keep in mind, Giants fans, you know, they could have a couple of guys missing next week's game due to the injuries. I mean, there's no guarantee Chris Snead's going to play. He's got to go through the correct protocol to bounce back from a concussion. So don't expect a very quick fix on this offensive line heading into the Bills game. And that's why I think the big focal point has to be on having the extra tight end for protection and having maybe Bear Pasco play a bigger role from the fullback spot, because they're going to need all the help they can get to give Eli Manning more time. That's going to be a big emphasis during practice this week.
And, of course, we'll keep an eye on all of the injuries this week, whether it's Snee or Hanoski, Tuck, Boss, Jacobs. We'll have all the latest on Giants.com, the only official place to find all the official news on your New York football Giants. And, of course, there are a bunch of other ways to follow the Giants in terms of social networking. You can go to Facebook.com/New York Giants, become a fan of theirs right there on Facebook. And, of course, follow them on Twitter at #GiantsChat. You send your questions at #GiantsChat. You follow the Giants at Giants on Twitter. And you have special contests, all sorts of stuff, exclusive pictures from the locker room. You name it, we got it. Make sure you follow the Giants on Twitter. Everybody, thanks for joining us today. Excellent work. We'll see you tomorrow morning on Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com.
Have a good one.